Trek and Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm your host, Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param, and my co-hosts are...
Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
And I'm James. I write Code Switch.
Excellent. So, it's been a little while, but it's glad to be back here hosting another episode dedicated to Starfinder, one of the most amazing games in the universe. And we're here to do a episode that somewhat surprised me when we found out we were doing it, which was when this book was announced, because of course we were going to do it when this book was announced. We're reviewing the Alien Archive 2. And the reason I say I was surprised is back when it was announced, I went over this on the podcast. I was just so surprised at the speed at which another Alien book was coming out, especially since the only real player option book we've had up until this point, purely dedicated player option book. They have been doing a good job of interweaving player options throughout all the books, but the only pure player option book we've gotten to this point has been Armory. Another book that surprised me in that it was the first one out, though we have since talked about why that made a lot of sense in a sci-fi setting and why they made that choice. But then, right after that, we get another Alien book. It is, unfortunately, I'm going to say unfortunately, the same size as all the other Starfinder books, besides the core rule book, at 159 pages. It does look like that is going to be the trend going forward. I do wish that they had thicker books for Starfinder, especially with the starvation of content that this game has. But, at least so far, the content that we have gotten has been fairly good. It looks like the tight space has forced them to be quite efficient in its use. But does that hold going forward? What are your initial thoughts of this book, Alex?
I'm super biased because I wrote three monsters in this book.
Okay, you are super biased. James, what's your overall first impression of this book?
Sorry, that caught me off guard. There's like 65 creatures in this. I wrote three of 65. Okay. I know most of the words in this book. I'm not biased, but I think it's a fine book. I mean, there's some stuff that is reprint, but not a lot. I think it's like three monsters I was just running through and counting. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of graft and modular rules for creation of types of creatures, which is really cool.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of toolkit involved in this book, a lot more than I expected. And I know that one of the reprints monsters is the giant pink T-Rex. I forget his name offhand. Or her name offhand. The one on Castorval. But what are the other two?
We have the Akata from the Adventure Path. Mm-hmm. And the Gowringal, also from the Adventure Path.
Aren't the Corpse Folk reprints? I thought they were in the AP.
No, they would be reprints if they weren't different types.
Oh, okay. So they're different types and they're in the AP. Interesting.
So it's the same rules, but they made new monsters using those rules.
Right. Ghoul also has a reprint of the base ghoul, but they also had a new ghoul there, too, as well.
It's good. See, look at that. James is firm but fair with Paizo's developers.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad the Gowringal's there. That's a cool creature.
Mm-hmm. And this book also seems to follow the format that we got used to in the Alien Archive original, which we all praised quite a bit. Every monster has a two-page spread, which usually has one or two, usually two different stat blocks incorporated, like two different versions of this monster, or alien. I guess I should say alien more often than not. and then the second page usually is a lot of the flavor of the monster. And then usually a player option related to the creature or the statistics to play a member of that species. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be a lot. This book seems to lean heavy into the you play it. I think even more so than Alien Archive. This seems to be almost every single species in this book is a playable one.
And if it's not inherently playable, there's a template to change a character to be like it.
With the exception of the giant pink T-Rex.
I mean, there are things that you can't play, like a lot of the demons or the other outsiders. You can't play Amigo or Color Out of Space either. So mm-hmm. sad. But there is a lot of cool stuff you can play.
And the way, if we were going over the just general themes, like usually the best series have like a set of themes you can see that they worked on. The ones I see in here are, there were a surprising amount of alien dinosaurs. There's a whole section just called Dinosaur. And then you have the giant pink T-Rex, which I keep flipping to its page and forgetting its name.
Well, you have the Renkrota, which was from the previous book, and there's actually a new, even pinker and bigger T-Rex with scythe hands.
Oh, the the Nyshalora.
Look at my scythe hands. I chop all the rice.
I mean, like, he's got four little scythe hands. It's got blades coming out of its butt.
It's he's also telepathic.
Why do you need your T-Rex to be telepathic?
Because he eats telepathic prey, because like half the creatures on Castroville have telepathy.
Yeah, so all you do is you just ping their brains and they go, oh, I don't speak that language, sir. And they go, oh, well, you speak the language of predator prey. I personally like that you can kill them, take their claws, and make sonic scythes out of them. That's sick.
Yeah. Some high-frequency blades.
Some of the other themes I noticed is there are the toolkit monsters. There's just like herd animal or predator or dinosaur.
Or orc.
Or, okay, that's not quite a template monster, but there is orc.
Oh, I heard Tolkien. I'm sorry. I mean, you did say Tolkien. I was like, Tolkien definitely wrote about horses some point.
Oh, totally. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. There's vermin, too. And the one thing that I really like, I actually wrote the herd animals in this book. It's one of the three things I did. Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing that's really cool is that when we were asked to do it, they were like, all right, just give us the stat blocks and we're going to have this cool system where, you know, nobody wants to see a billion pages of bugs because they're all the same stats. Same with a lot of animals, too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, here's a stat block. Here's a graph you can put on this predator stat block. And now you have this stat block that can be used for this generic predator. Because, like, when you look at tigers in Pathfinder, they're like, oh, we have rend and we have rake and we have pounce. And that is us. And, like, pretty much all cats are the same. But, like, this is like, hey, yeah, we're just going to do two pages of this, and here's some rules. Go make your own crazy alien herd animals, you crazy kids.
Yeah, the environment templates, you can also stat them out to make them more appropriate.
Yeah, that's just kind of what I imagine when I hear this book. I picture Rob McCreary's voice pulling out a flask and is like, come on, you crazy kids, go make your own alien predators and prey on stuff.
We're tired of making T-Rexes.
I'm too busy trying to make James Jacobs' alien dinosaurs a reality.
I was just wondering how many different types of multi-legged, elephant-nosed herd beasts I can put into my fantasy places or sci-fi planets.
How many variants of that idea can you come up with?
Three.
Then at least three. I mean, you could take that rule and you'd be like, I have an elephant that is touched by the gods and climbs in trees. Here's the arboreal and Asmar simple graphs on top of the herd animal template. Boom. Your divine Asmar tree climbing elephant is there.
I feel like the gods would get rid of that as a mercy kill.
So, like, I hope people who listen to us don't think, like, we're bursting out laughing because we don't like these rules. It's just the stuff you could do with them is so broad and varied that it's cool. And also really silly.
I'm still just caught on an arboreal elephant, sorry.
No, but if you want to know silly, have you seen the three-legged laser wolf monster? You've seen that one, right? Yeah, it's actually, James, Matt wrote it.
Really?
Yeah, and it's great. It's the three-legged tripod wolf monster. Look at this.
Oh my good lord. I didn't notice it had three legs. I just thought it was posed dramatically when I read over that one.
He was specifically told that it had to be a tripodal wolf.
Huh.
And so, like, it has the ability to shoot a beam of lasers out of its muzzle, among other things.
Yeah, I saw that and I didn't look at its butt, and I'm just like, all right, sure, dog in the front, I'm sure it's dog in the back.
This book really pushes the boundaries on what Alien is. I think Alien Archive is really safe in terms of its aliens for the most part, and this book dares to be a little bit weirder.
Sometimes, and then sometimes just goes, eh. Well, it's an alien.
To tell us more about the times it goes, James, because I know you feel very strongly about this.
Well, you have your space cats, you have your space dogs, you have your space slugs, I guess, and they're all like terrestrial versions. I mean, they scratch somebody's itch. They just don't have the cool hooks. Then there is one that I give a total pass to, and that is the space oysters that are ruled by hell.
Which one is that?
Oh god, I forget their name. But they look like, they don't look like, they kind of look like bivalves without the shells. I was looking at them like twice and I forgot the name of them. But Tashtari. Yeah, they form these really rigid caste systems.
Says it's a Milo V3
Embry.
Says, yeah, Embry. Let me get a picture of this up before Perim does, because it's great. Keep going.
Yeah, but they're basically mollusks who eventually formed a caste system, a very rigid caste system that they're all a fan of. All nice. A fan of, definitely.
Gosh. That's like Zon-Kuthon snails.
Yeah, and it turns out they're just ruled from hell through some, like, council, so.
Oh, that's really funny. That's great. I am all about our... Oh, this is hilarious. Yeah. How did I miss these?
Yeah, and they wear masks, so they don't show emotion, because any emotion is viewed as primitive.
That's so great. And they're giant snails.
Right, and they're just snails, octopuses, scallops without shells. Like, they're all, like, just mollusks.
No, but in this picture, I don't know if that's its tail or its cape, and both options are really funny.
But yeah, like, as far as, like, just anthropomorphized creatures and races go, like, the other ones are fine, I guess. They're kind of boring, but that one's dope.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Param.
It does seem like this is the book that definitely ticks off the we need to make the furry fans happy. You've got, like you said, you've got the cat folk and that aren't cat folk, and you've got the dog folk that have the weird senses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of don't understand why we made new aliens instead of just saying, here are these classic versions. Like, I guess I don't get why we need to have another group of cats when there's one here. And now there's another one in, like, Aeon Throne Book 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I mean, that one is really crazy, though. It's basically a cat giraffe person. No, it's great. Don't trust me. It looks so weird that it gets a buy from me. Like, stuff like that looks like it belongs in Voltron, which I'm okay with. And then there's stuff here that's like, you made Space Khajiit. That's what you did. And I'm okay with Space Khajiit, but I just don't understand why we made a new creature instead of using what we already had.
Yeah, but the Space Khajiit specifically are the Paltra, and they're a member of the Vescarian.
Yeah, well, so, and that's the thing, that race was like put in like the core rulebook in the Vescarium section when they're talking about all the wonderful things. I'm so sorry, wonderful. If you're listening and not seeing the YouTube video, I'm actually like quoting my fingers when I say the word wonderful. But all the wonderful things that the Vesk do to their native peoples.
I mean, I also uplifted bears, I think, get a pass just because I feel like they are so... I think they fill a different enough niche.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of feel... What is that? The movie, The Golden Compass. Like, they kind of feel like, you know, bears in that sense.
You know what? Like, I am sure that they are balanced, but when I look at that long list of abilities that they get, like, as a GM, it, like, ticks off all my, oh my gosh, this looks super OP. Like, this is, they got a climb speed of 20 feet, a movement speed of 40 feet, they have telepathy to a range of 30 feet, they get natural weapons like a Vesk, and their only real downside is that they don't really have, they can't have any brain augmentations, and, like, I can't even think of any that I would care to lose that on.
I mean, there's a couple that, like, help against, like, mind-affecting stuff.
Oh, and they have the thing that Noir have, where when they charge, they take no penalties, like a Blitz soldier.
Yeah, I mean, they still have a 5-foot reach, so that's something, even though they're a large creature.
That's true.
Well, this is also fulfilling my desire of the shapeshifter in Pathfinder we never quite got, where I could just bear the heck out of things.
Well, there's that, but, like, the new polymorph rules that are in this book that we haven't talked about yet are amazing, and that right. should... really helped to fill that niche anyway. They're actually so good that I'm upset that Reptoids came out in Alien Archive 1 because they can't use this great rule set.
Yeah, and they also have a good like Baleful Polymorph bit too, which is what I was like concerned about. As I was reading, I'm like, where's the Baleful version? And it's like, yes, thank you.
And they have mass, and it's great. And also, I keep saying it on the forums, but this picture of Quig, the iconic Yosoki mechanic, polymorphed into a regular rat is the greatest punny picture I've ever seen. And everyone at Paizo, if you are the person who put this art order in, you are amazing. And I hereby demand that every person at Paizo buys you a cookie, a singular cookie. You should have at least 50 cookies by the time this episode goes live.
It is a wonderful piece of art.
Oh, it's great. I love it. Also, but I'm a huge Polymorph Rules fan. Not having those in the core rulebook was one of the big, like, sads for me. Mm-hmm. And so after a year, finally having them is great.
Yeah, and I do want to get into the Polymorph Rules, but I just want to go over the last two what I considered major monster themes that we have in this book. Yeah. The next one that is a little bit more boring is it seems like this also has the fill-in-the-gap, pun not intended, category where it's like all the fantasy stuff that really should have been in the Alien Archive 1 if it wasn't so short. So that's where you're getting your ghouls and your ghosts, which are super important for any fantasy-ish thing. We're also seeing the return of the orcs that are now blue and evidently modified by the drow. We get our
modified is a very kind way to say that. It's more like selectively bred.
Chattled.
Yeah, it literally, it says, it calls them cattle. Like,
yeah.
Well, that's not disturbing at all.
Oh, it's super disturbing. Don't sugarcoat it, Param.
It's almost like the drow are terrible people.
They're awful. It's great. Like, they made them sound a little bit better in Alien Archive 1. Like, oh yeah, they trade with people. They're weapons dealers. Oh, well, you know, they deal weapons, but at least they're like part of society. Oh yeah, they also enslaved this dying out race and turned them into their servants.
One of those things Nicolas Cage did, the other one he didn't, so
I'm sure Nicolas Cage did both of those things. He's in so many movies.
I was referring to Lord of War, but I don't know, I haven't seen all of his movies.
I really love Lord of War.
Boy, do I have things to tell you about National Treasure 4.
What's your last theme there, Pharaoh?
Okay, there's also the dragons. They're back. We finally get our metallic dragons, and we also get our outer dragons. And they're built like they were the original dragons. It's like, here's a base dragon, and then you kit it by adding these template graphs. This book loves its template graphs.
I would actually go as far to say that having the outer dragons is more important and fitting to Starfinder than having either the chromatic or the metallic. I almost think that outer should have been an Alien Archive 1 because it's Starfinder. I don't care about some boring blue dragon. Give me the sun dragon.
Yeah. If I could throw a theme on there, the sun. There's a lot of creatures that have solar origins are made to be in the sun. There's at least six, if I remember right, looking through the book.
It's almost like there's a major adventure path coming out in less than a year that involves the sun. Mm. No way. Are you sure? What are you insinuating?
There's also a lot of Dominion of the Black stuff.
There is. But you know what, Pam? You're right, because there are also things like golems in this book. Mm-hmm. You have the hobgoblins, the Oni.
Oh, I need to talk about the hobgoblins. They ruined the poor hobgoblins.
What?
Yeah, the hobgoblins could have been some fantastic space monsters, but they turned the hobgoblins into these militant soldier mercenary types when these guys could have been the space stalker serial killers that the original Pathfinder version of hobgoblins were. Like, if you played using the classic Monsters Revisited versions of the hobgoblins, you had a scary freaking monster that you could throw up against low-level players and just really revel in the evil acts that, as a GM, you could do using it. And just turn them into these, like elite shock troop soldiers that aren't even all that elite. And then the art. Oh my god, the art for the hobgoblins. They just took the goblin head and put it on top of a really lanky body. instead well, I mean, of like the yeah. super long ears, scariest crap hobgoblins you're used to.
Well, I mean, that's also kind of like what they're doing in Pathfinder 2, isn't it? It seems like they're trying to redefine what a hobgoblin looks like. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, also in what was that Adventure Path? In their Iron Fang? Yeah, Iron Fang. They cast them all like that. Oh, sorry, hit the mic. They cast them all like that, and the ones in Tian Sha also kind of get that militaristic autocracy kind of update.
Yeah,
I want my space serial killers.
Get a bugbears.
Why can't they be space serial killers? Like, a serial killer usually works by themselves, like mm-hmm. not in a organized. So, like, why can't their like government and their society be this highly militaristic thing? And those people who work on the fringe and the edge are just these horrible murderers. Because man, do they know how to kill?
And actually, James just totally corrected me. I was thinking of bugbears because they're also goblins that are tall.
Kind of thought that's what you're talking about, because bugbears generally are the more horrifying of these.
Yeah. Okay, so now I'm just grumpy. Empirosaur, I don't hit bugbears.
Empirosaur asked, do the hobgoblin pictures have hair? The answer is no. They kept Crystal's canon from Iron Fang Invasion. They do not have hair.
Yeah, not their own, anyway.
Yeah, because I think in Iron Fang, like, they skin other people's hair and they wear it, right?
Ooh.
Yeah,
probably.
I think that's an Iron Fang. Iron Fang is a really dark adventure path. It's actually kind of cool like that. Fun stuff. One thing that I think is really interesting about this book is, like, there are a lot of areas where they took things that they didn't really give a whole lot of space to in the first Alien Archive, and they just added more. Like, Formians now have two more types of Formians. There are more types of devils and Azada, and lots of other creatures are just like, oh, well, you know, our two-page spread thing only had two stat blocks, so now let's add more. That actually might be a limitation of the Alien Archive presentation, where in Bestiary 1, you could have, like, four demons of the same book, and that presentation would allow it. But if you're only going to have demon as your header, and you're expecting to have two pages of monsters and then stuff, you can't really have more than, like, a couple stat blocks with it if you're still going to have that other page. Either that or you're going to have two straight pages of stat blocks, which might look weird. But I feel like that's such a small corner case that it's kind of like an acceptable downside of this format, because the format is great. I love having player content in this book. Have you seen some of the cool player content in this book, guys? I already talked about the Sonic site that's made out of space dinosaur arms.
Yeah, I mean, the Anasites have a powered armor, which looks like an Anasite labor, because there's more Anasites, which that's the closest planet to the sun, if I remember right, if I'm not crazy.
Yeah, there's a tactical trident based off of what a devil carries. There are, like, these crazy augmentations that, like, God, I don't remember. It's in the Laser Wolf. It's like this big glowing beating heart, and it does something cool with lasers that I can't remember.
I like the glass serpent. If you harvest it, you can get glass skin grafts, and then you can just go invisible.
Yeah.
Because going invisible is great.
Yeah, for like a minute a day total, just for, like, free on charges.
Yes. Oh, wait. Oh, man, I didn't even notice this. Did the Anasites from Avalon finally get stats?
No, not as a race. I don't believe
just
so.
These two creatures, then?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then it has some player options.
Oh, but there's power armor. I like power armor.
Yeah.
I generally enjoy this book, even though, like, there are definitely some places where it feels, like, a little repetitive. Like, I don't like a lot of the animal folk races. I feel like they're redundant when there's already all these other things in the world that kind of could have fit that design space. Mm-hmm. But I also really like a lot of the stuff. There's one thing that grinds my gears, though. And I feel like you guys have had your time to talk about it. There's one thing that grinds my gears. It's the planar scions, the Asmar and the Tiefling stuff. Okay. For the record, I'm okay with lumping those together as a planar scion thing instead of using, because, like, in traditional versions of Dungeons and Dragons, we've always had, like, the Gensai, or, like, you know, the planes touched, and that was sort of a word for people who have this sort of planar heritage. And I think Pathfinder has always wanted that word, and I think Planar Scion does well. What bothers me about it is that they give rules for having, like, the player race rules are clearly designed to be planar scions who are humans with an ancestry, and like that's everything it goes into. And then they provide graphs, because this book loves graphs that let you change anything into a planar scion, except because it's a graph, that's not actually something you can put on any character as a player but a human. So effectively all players who are going to play Asmar are limited to that one quote model unquote. Mm-hmm. And then like, I'm never going to see Robin run around as like a tiefling Lashunta, which I know is what she's going to want to do and stuff like that. I really wish that they took the time to have a feat that was like, here's a feat you could take at first level. Give me your feat and I make you planes touched if you're not a human. And I'd be cool with that. I actually think that might have even been better than making it like a race, just making it a feat. But that's me off my high horse. I don't like that. This is coming from the guy who wrote them as a regular race in Starfarer's Companion 2. I kind of wish we did the feat approach, and I was sad that Starfinder wasn't better than us, or Pazzo wasn't better than us.
Yeah, I looked over those rules too, and I was confused. I was going to take a look at it later because it did just kind of check out your ability to be that, unless you just want to ditch your stats and say, hey, I'm this.
It looks to me, looking it over, it looks like to me is that they wanted to give you an Asmar, a classic Asmar and a Tiefling race, and then they also wanted to roll the Fiendish and Celestial templates into that race, and that's what those are. But I also don't remember if Fiendish and Celestial are actually graphs in the Alien Archive 1. So maybe someone in chat can remind me if they're in Alien Archive 1. Well, I don't think they are.
They do have graphs for, like, Devil, Demon, I think. Oh, God, I'm trying to...
Well, I know they have...
Aeon.
Yeah, well, they have, those are for the summon monsters. The types, I feel like you could use those anywhere if you wanted to, but, like, they're designed specifically for summoning.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, it would be nice if it was a choice that you could just tack onto something else and have it just redo you a little bit.
I mean, I think that would have been a good way to improve it, but at the same time, I'm not going to harm it too much because it's just sort of keeping the same status quo we've been using for 30 years.
Yeah, true.
I would have liked something better, but I understand why it wasn't changed. Milo V3 in chat room says they probably could have done it like the Boreas race, the undead ones from where like you die and like you get a couple racial traits from your like former race or whatever. I actually think that would have been benefited from just being a feat too, because like the way that it's written, future races that come out that pretty much aren't in that limited list are really difficult to do because there's no rules for them and you don't know what's fair because you don't know what the balancing is. I kind of think it falls into the same thing, but ultimately, this is a very small annoyance of mine in an overall book that I really like.
Mm-hmm. And one of the other things I really like is the last category of monsters I noticed this is. This would only fit in a Doctor Who episode. Monsters, yeah. Like the color out of space, which is a color so evil that it will disintegrate you.
That's not Doctor Who. That's Lovecraft. There's literally a short story called "The Color Out of Space." Oh, like, that's what that is. Yeah, that one. There's a whole bunch of Lovecraft monsters in this book. Actually, there's The Color Out of Space. There's what was it? The Migo are in this book. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of like it's not as Lovecraft as Bestiary 4 is for Pathfinder, but there are enough here that you're like. Like, those are the two really big, well-known monsters that everybody knows if you're doing Lovecraft. So, yeah, it's pretty good. And I feel like we're going to see more over time, considering that Narlotep is a, you know, core deity in the setting.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for my opinion of the Black Lovecrafted Space Adventure Path, Paizo. Give it to me.
I mean, yeah, you have their priests in here.
You do. All I need is for you guys to finish Strange Aeons, and then we'll do Strange Aeons in space.
Oh God! How are you gonna make a wordcaster bard?
No, we're not. We're not. We're just gonna roll that under the carpet. It was a bad move. We shouldn't have allowed it. He's not good enough.
It's weird. It's not because he's overpowered. It's because he's bad.
I feel so bad for him, but he's not good enough. Hey. Karim, we tried. We used these rules. They don't like they work. But man, oh man.
Hey, I like being amplified, invisible, and in the sky, out of control.
Too bad he could do that like once.
All right, back to Alien Archive and not help alternate magic systems. So, going over the book, was there any particular monsters that like jumped out at you specifically?
Me or Param?
Let's start with Param.
to do it?
I mean, I really liked the squawks because little space.
I wrote squawks. Those number two.
I like in and I think that one of the things that the game really does need is like if you're going to do the classic anime space opera, you do need your sidekick critters, and the squawks sort of fill that role rather fantastically. The other thing I like is the living apocalypse. Because I like the idea of a theoretical concept that is given form and then wants to kill you. It's also one of the highest CR. It's a CR 20 colossal ooze, and you know I love oozes.
You do.
You get a lot of oozes in this book.
They are a big fan of oozes over in the Starfinder development team, it seems. I'm sure that Amanda Haman is sitting there going, "Man, oh man, I almost got them good in that one adventure. Let's get more oozes. More oozes. This is what I want, Rob. Give it to me."
A lot of Fae, too, which I'm a fan of.
Mm-hmm. And I like that the Oni have returned.
I do, yeah, too.
And they get the symbiotic link, basically, like, spatially with the hobgoblins.
Mm-hmm.
I just like Oni, and I feel so many times when they're, like, represented, they're represented this really boring way, and like this is finally a way that I think is actually kind of interesting.
Yeah, so the other thing I really like about the way that the Oni are in this book is that historically when 3.5 and Pathfinder do Oni, it's always Ogre Magi is first, and I kind of like this idea that the Hobgoblin ones are the ones that like everybody knows and are the most common, rather than like this monster that you would somewhat call a classic staple. I just think that it's a cool departure and it makes them fit better, because I think one of the challenges that Oni have is that in Tian Sha, an Oni can just manifest on the continent and like wander the hills and like destroy everything. But like, how is that going to work in outer space? Where's the spaceship? What crew do they have? Are they subjugating to the crew? Do the crew get fed? Do the Oni just get robots? Where are the robots coming from? Are there some crazy Zenyatta style Oni monster bots that pilot all these Oni ships? These are questions that need answering if it's going to be any type of Oni that isn't directly tied to another race. And that's why the Oni presented in this book are great, because they're just like, oh, hobgoblins love these guys. They take them everywhere. Oni are bae to the hobgoblins.
Yeah, you'd have to give them some weird trans or interplanetary flight unless they just like inhabited certain worlds. But yeah. Yeah.
You would just land on a planet and be like, oh man, this is the planet where this one Oni decided to manifest. Oh man.
Yeah, crap.
Yeah, no. It's great. Also, it's making me really excited for when we see space kami that have entire asteroids as wards. Hey, design team, if you can take that, and I'll write it if you ask me to.
Yeah, I mean, I like the play between Oni and kami in also games has been really wonky. So I want to see if they do put them out. How do they oppose them at all to Oni, or are they just two like ships in the same sea?
I'm going to say it, Oni versus Kami is way more interesting than Angels versus Fiends. It's so weird. It's great. I think it's way cooler, because the Kami are all about just wanting to like protect bits of nature that can't protect themselves. And Oni just want to trash everything to like indulge in their carnal delights. And that's sort of where like they clash. They clash it in the same way that a big company that wrecks natural resources, like, you know, a factory, you know, trying to make all of these items to make profits, the same way that would clash with somebody who's living like in a little forest. Like, it's less of a moralistic clash and more of an ideological and values clash, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because through the Jade Regent path, when they introduce kind of both of them, they go over that like Oni are just inherently pissed at the Kami for getting like a better run in life. Yeah. or they're already Kami that become corrupted.
Yeah, exactly.
So like there is one side at least kind of having a grudge,
right? And that's why they fight, and it's great. And I personally think that's more interesting than doing like the same old, I am the embodiment of good, I'm the embodiment of evil, fight, 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 like toys. Well, that's
yeah. me. And Kami doesn't necessarily have to be nature. Usually it is nature is like the typical for that, but you can have Kamis of other things too.
Yep. So official, we need Kami. Make it happen, Paizo. We know you listen sometimes.
Kami guru.
Another good source, if you want to know a lot about how Pathfinder interprets the Oni and the Kami, is Dave Gross's novel Master of Devils. For that book and that book only, besides the original two point of view characters, he adds Arnisant as a point of view character, which is the dog animal companion. Mm-hmm. And he goes on his own magical Tian Xia adventure where he encounters different Oni and Kami and dominates them and then becomes a spirit doggy, and it's just glorious and wonderful.
And what's the name of this book?
Master of Devils. It's the second in the Varian Jaeger arc for the Pathfinder Tales novels.
Is that the Prince of Wolves one?
Yeah, Prince of Wolves is the first one. Master of Devils is the second one. And then Master of Devils, they go to Tian Xia, and then they add that third point of view character, which is the dog, as he goes adventuring through Tian Xia with all the spirits.
Do I need to read the Prince of whatever?
It's, I mean, Prince of Wolves is a fun book, but you don't particularly need to. And I think it's available as an audiobook.
I kind of just want to hear about the dog.
Yeah, it was one of the best parts. And ever since that book, I've always, every time that they've had, there's five novels in that series with those characters. And ever since that one, I would always ask Dave when he came on this podcast, like, do we get another Arnisant? Can we please have Arnisant do some more stuff? That'd be great.
Magical dog adventure, go!
Yeah, totally. Like, we're going over to the Worldwind? Can we have Arnisant fight devils in the Worldwind? That'd be great.
He's the goodest boy.
You put a talking bear in here. You put a talking bear in this book, we couldn't have Arnisant?
No, you can have an uplifted dog race, and the entire race is just the descendants of Arnisant.
Yes, perfect, glorious.
The goodest boy. Oh, this is great. James already is like, I can't tell if James is thinking, this is horrible, you guys should stop talking, I don't want to hear about any more uplifted animals, or if James is thinking, wow, this would have been a better race than the Vlaka.
No, neither. I was just looking up stuff about Kami.
Oh, that works too.
Yeah, because I was just thinking about the nature of people thinking commies are at one place, and they're not necessarily, their duty isn't permanent. They're not permanent wards. Regardless, separate issue. Yeah, enlightened dogs, put a commie in them.
If you like it, then you gotta put a commie in it. Oh man. So I guess this is a good time for us to transition to talking about the polymorph rules, huh?
Yes. Let's talk about.
I would argue that this is the bulk of the player options, because it's a lot. I would argue that this changes the spellcasters that get these spells more than Summon Monster does. What would you think, James? You've actually played with Summon Monster.
I think Summon Monster changes more because now your action economy is different.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
You know, changing yourself is cool. If you're still trapped at the bottom of a hole because, somebody put a lid over it and you can't get out, doesn't matter, you know.
Do you know what I think is fun about all of these spells? Both Technomancers and Mystics get them.
Mm-hmm. But usually there's a switch out for types on them, right?
I don't think so. It doesn't say that.
Summon Monster does. Summon Monsters and Mystics get Fey creatures while the Technomancers get Tech creatures. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't see anything that makes you that limits you based on your class. I think you just do it.
Yeah, I haven't seen any limits on this one. It's just, you know, make a critter. It works a lot like the Summon Monster. For every spell level you get, it's a one. They're variable level spells, 1 to 6 for polymorph, and 4 to 6 for baleful polymorph. Mm-hmm. And there's also polymorph mass at 4 to 6, and baleful polymorph mass at 4 to 6. No, baleful polymorph is 1 to 6, and the mass spells are 4 to 6. My bad. And you have to, every time you learn one of these, you have to pick a finite number, usually 4 forms that you know. And so you have to prep those in advance, and those are the 4 things you can polymorph into. Just like a summon monster, these are the 4 things you can summon. And I think that is mostly a sanity check, so that somebody isn't showing up at the PFS table and then trying to build a polymorph in the middle of combat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I'm ever GM a table at a con and you do that, I'm not going to let you.
Yeah. No.
Well, you literally can't. It says you have to have them pre-picked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's people, you know, the summon monster thing is the same, you know, exists, same thing. If you look at the fifth level version of the polymorph spell, construct only if cast as a technomancer spell, plant if only cast as a mystic spell.
Huzzah. Oh, so there are a couple. So there are a couple that are limited based on your. Interesting, but that doesn't apply to all like the other creature types. Anybody can do any of them for the other ones.
Right, right. The other ones aren't restricted, and it only starts at fifth because those are the first levels that you can start even doing either of those two.
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad they continued the trend because it made sense. Because I didn't. I looked through the spell, the casting time, and went, it's probably the same.
So the thing that is kind of weird though, I think they're going to need, like, do you know how in Pathfinder they have rules for some gods that like change that up? I think that they're going to need to have like, hey, if you worship Triune, then you can pick the robots instead of the Fae. You know, I know that's what we kind of house rule for Tom, but like, you know. I still think they should. Gosh, when Tom sees us, he's going to turn himself into all the robots.
I mean, that presumes that Starfinder matures enough to where we can get in the weeds like that.
I mean, if your body's already mostly technological and then you turn yourself into a technology creature, does it really change anything?
I really want him to cut his legs off and replace them with that quad four set.
I wish he would cut his legs off. But polymorph mass, and then you have... They give you some pre-built forms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do.
Which probably you'd be able to use at a table if you weren't sure. You know, they're good. At least it's good that they're here. They didn't really have that so much built for the summon monster creatures, if I remember right.
No, they didn't.
So this is helpful.
It's very helpful. Mm-hmm. I also think that's a good idea for, like, looking at it and judging, like, roughly how strong these forms are, you know? Mm-hmm. I think it's good. I don't know. Just like for me, the hilarity comes in Baleful Polymorph. Baleful Polymorph is beautiful. It's a 1-6 level spell. And like, you know, as you would imagine, the low level version is like, oh, you get some minor penalties and some cosmetic changes. But like, I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that. It's like, hey, you know, I'm like, it feels like it takes a whole bunch of like, in Pathfinder, you would have low-level spells that, like, all basically, like, at different levels that all basically do the same thing, but would have different names. And this just feels, it's a great way to condense all of those. It's like, it's just Baleful Polymorph. It's just, I can't turn you into a rat yet. You just have some whiskers.
Yeah, it's like, what is it? The Bless, the Bane, the Good Hope, and whatever counters Good Hope.
Yeah. Good Hope is countered by Crushing Despair.
Yeah, by Crushing Despair, -1/-2. Yeah, and this just kind of compartmentalizes all in one.
I really appreciate the spell, and like it's a spell where every rank up feels like good. It's like, hey, you start off at a higher penalty because basically how the spell works is like it penalizes your physical ability scores, and as it gets stronger, you're more penalized. Your size changes. Eventually, you turn into this horribly weak creature. You turn into a small animal or vermin that's EA that always has a EAC of 12 and a regular AC of 10. So congratulations, you're now a 10th level or higher monster that can be hit with a 10 or higher. You're and gonna die.
That's great because it just tells you what your thing is. Don't bother doing math. You're gonna be dead anyway.
Yeah. Why do math when you're just gonna die?
Yeah, why make you do so much math when you suck?
And at the 3rd level version of the spell or higher, once they reach the maximum penalty, it just becomes permanent.
Yeah, so like, you sit there and you go, oh, God, get it off me. Oh, God, get it off me. Oh, God, get it off me. Well, I guess this is my life now.
I have to see. Yeah, you retain your intelligence, charisma, and everything. Yeah, so, like, as opposed to... Oh, no, that was the regular version. I'm looking for Baleful Polymorph if it takes away your intelligence.
It does not.
Does not. Yeah, I was just looking. I was like, I don't think it does. Whereas the other version eventually did just make you of animal intelligence.
Yeah, well, how the other one worked is that you'd make a save and then make another save to see if you just became useless. Trust me, Olivia has used that on enough of my monsters that I'm quite familiar.
That ooze is going to find its way out and be a horror.
No, it's just if someone is going to like be, oh man, mom, look, I'm just practicing my dispel magic spell. Oops. And then there's a Shoggoth and everybody's insane.
Yeah, little Timmy's going to die. But,
he deserved it.
There's something more horrifying about keeping your intelligence, wisdom, and charisma.
Mm-hmm. And being stuck. So, minor spoiler for an adventure that came out like almost 5 years ago now. Realm of the Fae Night Queen, which is a game that I keep assuming Jame played at my table, but he didn't. Basically, the final boss of that one has a entire arm of canaries that are like high level adventurers that she turned into canaries. And since she's Fae, and apparently like this realm is timeless, they've been stuck as birds for like 10,000 years, and now they all think they're birds just because they've gone insane. It's like at that point, you've been a bird for 10,000 years. Like you're basically a bird. You've been a bird longer than you've been a man. So you might as well just chirp and sing a few sweet notes. And it matters because they're like level 5 or 6, so they have hit points, even though they're these songbirds. And so she vampire punches them all the time. And, oh. No, it's awful. It's such a delightfully terrible, horrible person.
God, I love Faye.
Sadly, Paul and Olivia crushed her really fast.
That's one of my favorite of the standalone adventures.
I like parts of it. I think that the monster choice is repetitive. And that's kind of boring to run as a GM.
Just another Pathfinder thing, Cult of the Ebon Destroyer. That's a good one.
Oh, that one was horrifying. We don't talk about Cult of the Ebon Destroyer.
That
was one of the meanest boss battles I've ever been in.
Yeah, part of it was you ran short on time. Part of it is those bosses are just horrifying.
Yeah, they're super horrifying.
Back to the book real quick. At the end of
just real Polymorphs. Quick.
Yeah, just real quick. You have the appendix with they go over universal creature rules, mm-hmm. Which I believe are 90% reprints from before, unless I'm crazy.
There are a couple that are new, I think. Like, there are some things that were there. They were rules that were in the original book, but they weren't universal creature rules. And so they were changed into universal rules. Like, I don't think multi-armed was a creature rule in the original book. But so many monsters have multi-armed now that it just makes sense to put it there.
Right, right. I like that it goes over fast healing and regeneration again, because that's always helpful.
Yes.
It's also worth noting that this doesn't have the build a monster rules like the first bestiary has. The first Alien Archive. So if you want to build monsters, you still need to do the Alien Archive 1. Unlike in Pathfinder, where the rules kept getting reprinted throughout the bestiaries.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Parts of them got reprinted. Not everything did, but most of it did.
By the way, I don't know if this is any different. Oozes and plants are not immune to sicken or shaken.
Or nauseated. Pathfinder, they weren't, as long as it could target an object, but I don't remember 100%.
Yeah, and oozes aren't immune to disease, which I thought they would be. Once again, don't know if this is any different. I was just looking through and went, huh.
I mean, I understand why they're not immune to shaken. Have you ever seen a traded yellow?
I mean, plants are, because they're mind-affecting. I messed that one up. But oozes, it's shaken, nauseated. Seems like it goes through.
Okay, so overall thoughts on this book. James.
I think the book is pretty good. I mean, I like all the new Fae. The sun theme kind of makes it... I don't plan on running a sun theme game anytime soon, so those creatures presented to me are not of much use to me. The polymorph rules are cool, and I like having just a set, here's what happens when you do this, instead of having to deal with all the shenanigans that comes with that. A lot of the monster design is pretty cool. Some of it I'm not a fan of, with anthropomorphic animals. But there are a lot of cool ones, too, with pretty neat backstories. I don't think it's as good as the first Alien Archive, but I still think it's a pretty good book. And, I mean, Space Oysters from Hell.
Alex?
I think that Alien Archive is a high-quality book. I think it fills a lot of gaps that Alien Archive 1 had, and there's enough new monsters with new, fresh ideas that I'm interested in. I do think that some of the races feel a little bit redundant mostly because I feel like they don't take advantage of the shared Pathfinder, Starfinder cosmology. There's a lot of things that don't really feel like they need to be there, but are anyway. But overall, I think it's good. I think a lot of the items and special equipment are awesome, and a lot of the monsters are really kind of scary, and I enjoy that. So I don't necessarily know if I would want another Alien Archive like this, because I'm going to be real, the main selling point for me is the polymorphing rules. I think there's a lot of fun stuff that can be done with them, but maybe we need monsters that are a little like, or maybe aliens that are a little more alien, or maybe some more updates on classic stuff, because a lot of this feels like just kind of fantasy, like the things that are updated don't feel naturally updated, and the things that are everything else feels heavy, just like it feels safe still, if that makes sense. There wasn't anything that really like blew me away with its weirdness.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I have the same feeling on that part, but go ahead, Param.
I overall think this is a solid book, and I definitely think that if you are a Starfinder GM, you're definitely going to want to get this, and if you're a Starfinder Mystic or Technomancer, you're going to want to get this as well for the polymorph rules. I do think that it is a fantastic book, fantastic archive. The monster choices are very well done, very well written, and the player options are interesting and flavorful. It does suffer because Alien Archive 1 was such a fantastic entry, probably my favorite monster book ever, period. Mm-hmm. And this is following in its footsteps, but it definitely feels like this is a lot like the Bestiary 2 in Pathfinder. This is filling the obvious gaps that the first book wasn't able to fill, and therefore it feels like it's like its lesser sequel. This is the lost world to Alien Archive 1's Jurassic Park. It's still a fantastic book. You still should definitely get it, but it's not going to be as revolutionary as reading that first one.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you then, Param.
Mm-hmm.
If Alien Archive 1 was 300 pages and 1 and 2 was all that was in it, like they took everything from 2 and everything from 1 and smushed it together, do you think that the content in 2 would have still felt the same way that it does?
No. If this was, if we just got one double-sized Alien Archive 1, it would have just been even more amazing, because a lot of this book just feels like it's stuff that was missing from the first one or stuff that they felt that they needed to include that they weren't able to include. And if it was in the original book, then it would have just felt like, oh, this is the stuff that's obviously supposed to be here, and it would have still felt amazing. I think that a combined Alien Archive that had the contents of 1 and 2 would have been an even stronger book than Alien Archive 1.
It would have been the best bestiary ever and probably could never be dethroned.
Right.
True. I mean, they did update Trox.
Yeah, the Trox. We forgot about the Trox. They're in here.
I mean, there's probably a good reason we forgot about the Trox.
Well, because they were broken racially.
Yeah, I mean, they were basically designed to show what a system could do, and then they were never really put anywhere except for as, like, a slave race for Dwager.
Yeah, they actually kind of jump back on that and going, yeah, those are just like a couple of them and they suck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, real talk, there's a lot of races where they just kind of jump back on Pathfinder portrayal.
Yeah, they suck.
Yeah. We don't need that anymore. We've got this now. Orcs are the big one, man. Orcs, I still can't believe they made them purple and that they didn't tell me why they're purple and not green.
Well, like, everything else is purple. The drow are purple.
But Channel is purple.
Yeah.
Our channel is purple, but again, like the drow were purple / blue / that kind of ashen gray color in Pathfinder. Like, that's not a departure for them. Going from green to purple is literally going to the opposite side of the color wheel.
Yes.
I mean, but how we look at colors, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the opposite side of the color wheel. Yeah, green is opposite purple. That's why supervillains wear it.
Yeah, but like in nature, who knows? You know, maybe with all that gene splicing, they put a little, drow in them, made them purple.
Every time we talk about the drow, they get worse.
Yeah. By the way, my favorite race is probably the Demai, because they're just humans, except that they control kaiju.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Oh, gosh. So, and I wanted to mention the Demai. If not for they have the most handsome human-ish noid in Starfinder.
God, he looks like Lenny Kravitz.
Oh yeah, it's the opposite of the humanoid in Aeon Throne. Give me a second. This guy gives me nightmares. Here it is.
And then the woman looks like Gaia from, or like Halsey from Halo, almost.
Anybody who has this book is going to know exactly which race I'm going to flip to. They horrify me. This is one of the races in the Aslanti Star Empire.
What the heck is that thing?
It is a new topic. We could always talk about this content in the APs in future episodes.
Good lord.
God, that person ate too much bubblegum.
That's not
good. He looks I feel like I saw that exact character in like an episode of animated Men in Black in the 90s. That's like,
yeah, yeah, I get you there.
No, it's terrifying. We don't. We'll probably end up. We should probably cover AP player facing content sooner or later, but we don't have to cover that right now. That's scary.
Especially since we're running up on time for this episode. So before we go, do any of you want to shout out to anything? Starting with James.
There's a convention at Red Caps in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I believe it's next weekend, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
I'll be there on Sunday running a Starfinder game. Mm-hmm. There might still be seats for. Don't worry. I only plan to kill everybody. It'll be a mm-hmm. quick game.
We'll run it again, and then you can join the pile of bodies.
But yeah, is there anything Starfinder you want to shout out to, Alex?
Not right now, except that the third race that I wrote that I never announced was the Gorians, and they were fun. So there's a fun story about that I like to tell. I wrote the Gorian content in Ultimate Wilderness 2. So when I got assigned the Gorian race in Alien Archive 2, Rob asked me if I was good with it. And I was like, yeah, this is really good. It's going to be easy. Actually, you know, it makes a lot of sense that you would assign the Gorians to me because, you know, I did so much for them in Ultimate Wilderness. And then I get this message back from Rob that was like, well, it's a great thing that you got it then. I had no idea that you worked on it before. And I was like, oh, okay. But I got to make a bunch of the feats and stuff I wrote, like, core for the race. Like, the fact that there are two subtypes for the race is from a feat that I wrote. And that was fun. I really enjoyed that.
See. And now something else to shout out, Alex, about something we are going to be starting to do soon.
I'm going to be running an actual play for the network. It's called Seasons Beatings, a Yuletide adventure actual play. It's going to be so exciting. I'm going to be GMing the adventure that I wrote for Everyman Gaming, Yuletide Terror. Mm-hmm. And my hapless players are going to be one Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param, Vanessa Hotchkins, Louise Loza, and the Starfinder development team's very own Jason Keeley. They're going to have to try to save Yuletide. It's going to be great. I'm so excited. You should check out our Discord and our website and stuff for more information about when that's going to be.
Yeah. And it's going to be a seasonal Let's Play. It's just going to be for the holiday. It's not going to be an ongoing one, but I do expect it will be fantastic. So it's a great chance to just jump in and see what we're like as players.
Yeah. I'm really excited for it. It should be a lot of fun. And, I'm so excited. It's going to be great. I got Jacob Blackman, who did all the art for the original book, to do a whole bunch of more custom art for the game. And I'm really excited. If you're a fan of Jacob's, you should totally commission him. He always takes commissions. And as Param got to witness, he's ridiculously fast. Mm-hmm. If you message him and like, hey, draw my character. Like, he's had he literally had all of their sketches done for me in like, gosh, I think I got the last one on Monday at noon, and I got all the sketches back by like 4 o'clock that afternoon. And then he had them all colored by like 2 days later. It was great.
It's insane. He works insanely fast.
Yeah. So like, Param has been told by many industry people how fast he is. And I guess you just didn't believe him. I believe any of us.
The fast is relative, because I've commissioned a lot of art, and it's like, oh, a fast person gets me something in a few days to a week, and a really slow person takes longer than
hours.
That. Oh my gosh, dang it!
I mean, like, you know, if he's really backed up, it might take longer. But I can tell anyone who's listening to now, he's probably raring to take your commission, so you should do it. But yeah, that's about it. Stay tuned. I'm really excited.
And some other things you should get excited about is the rest of the content on the No Direction Network, such as No Direction, our Pathfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast, No Direction Adventurous, which is our actual play podcast through the War for the Crown adventure path, GM'd by Crystal Fraser herself, who was the development lead for that adventure path, so nobody knows it's better, and she is fantastic at NPCs, personality, and voices. It is a sight to behold. Do check that out. We also have an incredible amount of blog content available on the web, including Code Switch, and the mini blogs that Alex writes.
I mean, it's just iconic design and guidance, but yeah!
As well as many others by many well-loved people on the network, including those who have done work for Paizo or work directly for Paizo. So it's good content, some of the best content on the internet, in my opinion, especially if you're interested in Pathfinder or Starfinder. It's on there every single day, so go ahead and check us out!
Do it.
You can do so at nodirectionpodcast.com, where you can also join our Discord, which is the chillest chat room about Pathfinder or Starfinder related content on the internet. And finally, make sure that if you're interested in this sort of content continuing, please consider supporting us on Patreon. You can find a link to there on our website, nodirectionpodcast.com, and it's only through the Patreon that this show and our other shows are made possible. We appreciate our patrons. Thank you very much. Until next time, go beyond with No Direction.
Our patrons are actually getting...
What's up? I'll pause.